Cambridge International Examinations. International General Certificate of Secondary Education. June Examination Series 2015. English as a Second Language. Extended Tier. Listening Comprehension. Welcome to the exam. In a moment, your teacher is going to give out the question papers. When you get your paper, fill in your name, centre number and candidate number on the front page. Do not talk to anyone during the exam. If you would like the recording to be louder or quieter, tell your teacher now. The recording will not be stopped while you are doing the exam. Teacher, please give out the question papers, and when all the candidates are ready to start the test, please turn the recording back on. Now you're all ready, here is the exam. Questions 1 to 4. You will hear four short recordings. Answer each question on the line provided. Write no more than three words for each detail. You will hear each recording twice. Question 1. A. Which program do they decide to watch together? B. What time should the news be on this evening?
There's a really good program on TV tonight.
Oh, do you mean the new one? The Nature Show? I want to watch that.
Actually, I was thinking about another one. It's called My Family. It's supposed to be really funny.
Well, I could do with a laugh, so let's see that, shall we? And I guess you'll want to see the 10 o'clock news afterwards, won't you?
Yes, but it'll be later tonight because there's a football match on, and that doesn't start until 8:45.
Oh, you're right. It's supposed to be on after the match at 10:20, but it says here that it depends on what time the match finishes.
There's a really good programme on TV tonight.
Oh, do you mean the new one? The Nature Show? I want to watch that.
Actually, I was thinking about another one. It's called My Family. It's supposed to be really funny.
Well, I could do with a laugh, so let's see that, shall we? And I guess you'll want to see the 10 o'clock news afterwards, won't you?
Yes, but it'll be later tonight because there's a football match on, and that doesn't start until 8:45.
Oh, you're right. It's supposed to be on after the match at 10:20, but it says here that it depends on what time the match finishes.
Question 2. A. Which exhibition is closed to visitors at the moment? B. Where is the new museum cafe?
Thank you for calling the Museum of Discovery. We are open from Tuesday to Sunday from 9:30 until 6:45 p.m. The new exhibition on space travel is proving very popular. Please book ahead to avoid disappointment. And we apologise that the science exhibition is not available until the end of the month due to heating problems. Finally, the cafe has now reopened. It's moved from the first floor next to the shop and is now located beside the entrance. We look forward to seeing you there. Thank you for calling the Museum of Discovery. We are open from Tuesday to Sunday from 9:30 until 6:45 p.m. The new exhibition on space travel is proving very popular. Please book ahead to avoid disappointment. And we apologise that the science exhibition is not available until the end of the month due to heating problems. Finally, the cafe has now reopened. It's moved from the first floor next to the shop and is now located beside the entrance. We look forward to seeing you there.
Question 3. A. Which part of his project is the student going to work on next? B. Who will he ask to help him with the last section of his project?
I've had a look at your project, Dan, and it's looking good. I just think the introduction needs a bit more information in it.
I know. I'm going to do that later. Do you think the graphs are okay?
They're very helpful, I think. You could make them slightly bigger, though.
No problem. That's easy. So I'll do that straight away. I also need to interview someone so I can write about them in the final part. But I'm not sure who to ask.
How about someone in your family? Your dad, maybe?
He would be good, but he's away this week. But my uncle's here tomorrow. I'll see if he can do it.
I've had a look at your project, Dan, and it's looking good. I just think the introduction needs a bit more information in it.
I know. I'm going to do that later. Do you think the graphs are okay?
They're very helpful, I think. You could make them slightly bigger, though.
No problem. That's easy. So I'll do that straight away. I also need to interview someone so I can write about them in the final part. But I'm not sure who to ask.
How about someone in your family? Your dad, maybe?
He would be good, but he's away this week. But my uncle's here tomorrow. I'll see if he can do it.
Question 4. A. What must students paint for this year's art exhibition? B. What two things must each student write on the back of their picture?
Listen, everyone. I want to tell you about the college art competition. I know lots of you entered last year, and we still have some of your amazing pictures of islands on show in the hall. We had a few good suggestions for this year's topic, and although lots of you were keen on doing buildings, we've gone for trees. Your picture can be any size for a change. Don't forget to put your telephone number and postcode on the other side of the picture too. We decided it's better not to have your name or class number there so the judges don't know who did each one. Listen, everyone. I want to tell you about the college art competition. I know lots of you entered last year, and we still have some of your amazing pictures of islands on show in the hall. We had a few good suggestions for this year's topic, and although lots of you were keen on doing buildings, we've gone for trees. Your picture can be any size for a change. Don't forget to put your telephone number and postcode on the other side of the picture too. We decided it's better not to have your name or class number there so the judges don't know who did each one.
That is the end of the 4 short recordings. In a moment, you will hear question 5. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 5. You will hear a conservation expert giving a talk about some islands off the west coast of Scotland called St Kilda. Listen to the talk and complete the details below. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Hello, and thank you for coming. I'm here to tell you about the group of islands called St Kilda, which are sometimes described as the islands at the edge of the world. St Kilda is located in the North Atlantic, 41 miles west of the island of North Uist in the Outer Hebrides, which is off the west coast of Scotland. St Kilda is formed from the rim of an ancient volcano, and it's the most remote part of the British Isles. Comprising four islands, as well as several sea stacks, St Kilda is truly spectacular. It is one of only 29 locations to be awarded mixed World Heritage status, in recognition of both its natural and cultural significance. It's the most complete and intact landscape of its type in Europe. Now uninhabited, St Kilda was home to a community of islanders for thousands of years, before the final 36 people were evacuated in 1930. It's remarkable to think that people lived there at all, if you consider how remote it is, the difficult landscape, and the challenging weather. But people did, and at its peak, there were up to 200 people living on the islands. They survived not on a diet of fish, as you might expect, but on seabirds, which were caught and used for food and for much more. The meat was dried and stored, and the eggs were eaten. Their oil provided fuel for lamps, and their feathers were stored and sold to any visitors who came. Every part of the bird was used. The beaks became brooch pins, the bones were turned into needles, the skins were used to make shoes. It's hard to imagine that people in Britain were still living like this around 85 years ago. They also managed to farm a few crops, which were dried in storage chambers built out of stone. About 1,400 of these still remain. Nowadays, the island is owned by an organisation called the National Trust. They have volunteers staying there, and they organise working visits to the islands, for example, to repair walls and preserve the wildlife and their natural habitat. The islands are home to unique subspecies of mice and wrens, both of which are larger than those found on the mainland. Wild sheep are the focus of one of the world's longest-running mammal research programmes. Dogs and cats aren't permitted on the islands, and great care is taken to ensure that no rats are found in supplies which arrive by boat. The majority of visitors to the islands arrive by sea, and the journey time can be at least 6 or 7 hours from the Outer Hebrides. A place named Village Bay has the only jetty where boats can come in, although if the wind is blowing the wrong way, this would be impossible, so a boat would have to turn round and sail all the way back again.
Now you will hear the talk again.
Hello, and thank you for coming. I'm here to tell you about the group of islands called St Kilda, which are sometimes described as the islands at the edge of the world. St Kilda is located in the North Atlantic, 41 miles west of the island of North Uist in the Outer Hebrides, which is off the west coast of Scotland. St Kilda is formed from the rim of an ancient volcano, and it's the most remote part of the British Isles. Comprising four islands, as well as several sea stacks, St Kilda is truly spectacular. It is one of only 29 locations to be awarded mixed World Heritage status, in recognition of both its natural and cultural significance. It's the most complete and intact landscape of its type in Europe. Now uninhabited, St Kilda was home to a community of islanders for thousands of years, before the final 36 people were evacuated in 1930. It's remarkable to think that people lived there at all, if you consider how remote it is, the difficult landscape, and the challenging weather. But people did, and at its peak, there were up to 200 people living on the islands. They survived not on a diet of fish, as you might expect, but on seabirds, which were caught and used for food and for much more. The meat was dried and stored, and the eggs were eaten. Their oil provided fuel for lamps, and their feathers were stored and sold to any visitors who came. Every part of the bird was used. The beaks became brooch pins, the bones were turned into needles, the skins were used to make shoes. It's hard to imagine that people in Britain were still living like this around 85 years ago. They also managed to farm a few crops, which were dried in storage chambers built out of stone. About 1,400 of these still remain. Nowadays, the island is owned by an organisation called the National Trust. They have volunteers staying there, and they organise working visits to the islands, for example, to repair walls and preserve the wildlife and their natural habitat. The islands are home to unique subspecies of mice and wrens, both of which are larger than those found on the mainland. Wild sheep are the focus of one of the world's longest-running mammal research programmes. Dogs and cats aren't permitted on the islands, and great care is taken to ensure that no rats are found in supplies which arrive by boat. The majority of visitors to the islands arrive by sea, and the journey time can be at least 6 or 7 hours from the Outer Hebrides. A place named Village Bay has the only jetty where boats can come in, although if the wind is blowing the wrong way, this would be impossible, so a boat would have to turn round and sail all the way back again.
That is the end of question 5. In a moment, you will hear question 6. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 6. You will hear 6 people talking about fame. For each speaker, 1 to 6, choose from the list, A to G, which opinion each speaker expresses. Write the letter in the box. Use each letter only once. There is one extra letter which you do not need to use. Speaker 1.
I'd love to be famous one day. I've always been into singing and can imagine myself on stage in front of thousands of screaming fans and hearing my records played all day long on the radio and on TV. I've never fooled myself into thinking that it'd be easy, though. You have to work really hard if you want to be successful. Also, being in the public eye all the time must be so difficult. Imagine just going out to the shops and strangers taking photos of you all the time. For me, that would be the real downside to it.
Speaker 2.
It's such a great thing if you've got real talent, and even greater if people know who you are because of it. That's what so many kids dream of. But I don't think they realise how it can affect the way your life turns out. In many cases, not in a positive way. It's really hard for child stars to know what normal life is like, and they just don't get a chance to grow up properly. And as an adult, they'll always be remembered for what they did years back, probably criticised for it too. In fact, I'd say that the negatives outweigh the positives as far as being famous is concerned.
Speaker 3.
When I was growing up, I had posters of all my favourite singers and actors all over my bedroom walls. I was always trying to be like them. Although I must admit that these days, famous people don't always behave in the best way. I still think that kids can get a lot out of having a person like this to look up to. They see how they deal with stress, how to be confident, and hopefully learn how not to do some things too. Anyway, I think it gives them a reason to try to succeed in life, whatever it is they want to do.
Speaker 4.
One of my all-time favourite TV programmes was a comedy that was on when I was growing up. There was a boy in it who I thought was brilliant. Everyone used to say that he'd never be as good when he grew up, but he's still acting and getting some good roles too. He just seems like such a normal person, really. These days, it's so much easier for people to get a taste of fame. All you have to do is post a video of yourself online, and before you know it, you'll be getting thousands of hits and your name is everywhere. It might not last, but that's the way it is nowadays.
Speaker 5.
I belong to a drama group. Actually, I've always loved acting. We have a great laugh together and it's a fantastic way to put your troubles to one side. But every time we put on a play, it's the thought that we might be noticed and that people might find out about us that really gets us excited and makes us do our best. Some people say that if you can sing, play an instrument or get up on stage, then you've got the best chance of achieving fame. But actually, I think anyone can, no matter what you do, as long as you try hard and show a bit of passion for what you do.
Speaker 6.
I think everyone would admit that at some time in their life they've dreamed about being famous. And you can see that lots of people want exactly that if you look at the number of videos and pictures that people post of themselves online. I think there's more to it than that, though. You've got to be in the right place at the right time and know the right people. Those lucky ones that do just that have got everything. Okay, there are some negative aspects, but you'd put up with these to be able to enjoy all the benefits, wouldn't you?
Now you will hear the six speakers again. Speaker 1.
I'd love to be famous one day. I've always been into singing and can imagine myself on stage in front of thousands of screaming fans and hearing my records played all day long on the radio and on TV. I've never fooled myself into thinking that it'd be easy, though. You have to work really hard if you want to be successful. Also, being in the public eye all the time must be so difficult. Imagine just going out to the shops and strangers taking photos of you all the time. For me, that would be the real downside to it.
Speaker 2.
It's such a great thing if you've got real talent. And even greater if people know who you are because of it. That's what so many kids dream of. But I don't think they realise how it can affect the way your life turns out. In many cases, not in a positive way. It's really hard for child stars to know what normal life is like, and they just don't get a chance to grow up properly. And as an adult, they'll always be remembered for what they did years back, probably criticised for it too. In fact, I'd say that the negatives outweigh the positives as far as being famous is concerned.
Speaker 3.
When I was growing up, I had posters of all my favourite singers and actors all over my bedroom walls. I was always trying to be like them. Although I must admit that these days, famous people don't always behave in the best way. I still think that kids can get a lot out of having a person like this to look up to. They see how they deal with stress, how to be confident, and hopefully learn how not to do some things too. Anyway, I think it gives them a reason to try to succeed in life, whatever it is they want to do.
Speaker 4.
One of my all-time favourite TV programmes was a comedy that was on when I was growing up. There was a boy in it who I thought was brilliant. Everyone used to say that he'd never be as good when he grew up, but he's still acting and getting some good roles too. He just seems like such a normal person, really. These days, it's so much easier for people to get a taste of fame. All you have to do is post a video of yourself online, and before you know it, you'll be getting thousands of hits and your name is everywhere. It might not last, but that's the way it is nowadays.
Speaker 5.
I belong to a drama group. Actually, I've always loved acting. We have a great laugh together and it's a fantastic way to put your troubles to one side. But every time we put on a play, it's the thought that we might be noticed and that people might find out about us that really gets us excited and makes us do our best. Some people say that if you can sing, play an instrument, or get up on stage, then you've got the best chance of achieving fame. But actually, I think anyone can, no matter what you do, as long as you try hard and show a bit of passion for what you do. Speaker 6.
I think everyone would admit that at some time in their life they've dreamed about being famous. And you can see that lots of people want exactly that if you look at the number of videos and pictures that people post of themselves online. I think there's more to it than that, though. You've got to be in the right place at the right time and know the right people. Those lucky ones that do just that have got everything. Okay, there are some negative aspects, but you'd put up with these to be able to enjoy all the benefits, wouldn't you?
That is the end of question 6. In a moment, you will hear question 7. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 7. You will hear a student interviewing a woman who started her own bread-making business. Listen to their conversation and look at the questions. For each question, choose the correct answer, A, B, or C, and put a tick in the appropriate box. You will hear the interview twice.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for coming to our college today. We're really looking forward to finding out more about your experience of setting up your own business, as it's something that a few of us here would love to do in the future.
Thanks for inviting me. I hope I'll be able to give you some useful information.
Okay. Well, would you like to start by briefly telling us why you decided to set up your own business?
Sure. So, I've always loved freshly baked bread, and I used to make my own whenever I had time. My dad taught me how to do it, actually. Then I started going to an evening class in baking. The person who lived next door to me asked me to go to it with her. Anyway, the tutor there really liked what I did, and that was what gave me the confidence to set up my own business.
How long ago was that?
Just 2.5 years ago, actually, so I haven't been going for that long.
Did you always think you'd have your own business?
No, far from it. When I was at school, I was really interested in architecture, and I thought I'd go on to study that at university. But in the end, I did a degree in graphic design. It was so hard to find work in that area, though. Then, when I started baking seriously, I did an online course in business management in my spare time to help me get going.
Did you have to borrow a lot of money to start the business?
I did have to get a small loan, yes. I went to the bank, fully expecting them to tell me to come back in a few years when I was older and more experienced. I was only in my early 20s, to be fair, but actually, they took my business plan seriously and made some really useful suggestions. I was quite surprised by their attitude.
Something lots of us want to know is whether you found it was easy to begin with.
It was exciting, but I wouldn't say that it was easy. I put in a lot of hours to begin with and didn't give myself much of a salary for the first couple of months, as I wanted to pay back the loan as fast as possible. It was deciding how and where to publicise the business that turned out to be the most challenging, though.
And now, what do you like most about running your own business?
It's great being your own boss, to be honest, and I've got some really good people working with me now. I only employ 3 others, all part-time, but we get along very well together. That's what I get more satisfaction from, which surprised me. I always thought I'd enjoy the interaction with customers the most. But don't get me wrong, that's something I really value too.
What are your plans for the future?
Well, we're about to move into another building. We need a bit more space to work in. I'm worried about being overambitious, though, so I'm going to wait for a year or so before introducing more types of breads and other baked goods. Several people say I should try to get a deal with a large retailer, but I value my independence, to be honest.
Last year, you won an award for the best new food business. What was that like?
That was an incredible experience. One of my customers nominated me, and I really didn't expect to win, because the other people in the competition were amazing. That was the high point, actually, getting to know some of them and seeing what they'd achieved. Of course, it was nice to get first prize, £5,000, and it was fun appearing on a radio programme to talk about my business. I've never done that before.
It sounds really good. I'd just like to ask you one more question, if that's okay. If someone said to you that they were thinking of setting up a business now, what would be your top tip for them?
Well, I'd have lots of suggestions, actually. It's important to have some financial security. But more than anything, I'd say to know exactly what you hope to achieve. You don't need to come up with something totally new, but whatever your idea is, you must believe in it and be prepared to work hard at it.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming in today. It's been really interesting talking to you.
My pleasure.
Now you will hear the interview again.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for coming to our college today. We're really looking forward to finding out more about your experience of setting up your own business, as it's something that a few of us here would love to do in the future.
Thanks for inviting me. I hope I'll be able to give you some useful information.
OK. Well, would you like to start by briefly telling us why you decided to set up your own business?
Sure. So, I've always loved freshly baked bread, and I used to make my own whenever I had time. My dad taught me how to do it, actually. Then I started going to an evening class in baking. The person who lived next door to me asked me to go to it with her. Anyway, the tutor there really liked what I did, and that was what gave me the confidence to set up my own business.
How long ago was that?
Just 2.5 years ago, actually, so I haven't been going for that long.
Did you always think you'd have your own business?
No, far from it. When I was at school, I was really interested in architecture, and I thought I'd go on to study that at university. But in the end, I did a degree in graphic design. It was so hard to find work in that area, though. Then, when I started baking seriously, I did an online course in business management in my spare time to help me get going.
Did you have to borrow a lot of money to start the business?
I did have to get a small loan, yes. I went to the bank, fully expecting them to tell me to come back in a few years when I was older and more experienced. I was only in my early 20s, to be fair, but actually, they took my business plan seriously and made some really useful suggestions. I was quite surprised by their attitude.
Something lots of us want to know is whether you found it was easy to begin with.
It was exciting, but I wouldn't say that it was easy. I put in a lot of hours to begin with and didn't give myself much of a salary for the first couple of months, as I wanted to pay back the loan as fast as possible. It was deciding how and where to publicise the business that turned out to be the most challenging, though.
And now, what do you like most about running your own business?
It's great being your own boss, to be honest, and I've got some really good people working with me now. I only employ 3 others, all part-time, but we get along very well together. That's what I get more satisfaction from, which surprised me. I always thought I'd enjoy the interaction with customers the most. But don't get me wrong, that's something I really value too.
What are your plans for the future?
Well, we're about to move into another building. We need a bit more space to work in. I'm worried about being overambitious, though, so I'm going to wait for a year or so before introducing more types of breads and other baked goods. Several people say I should try to get a deal with a large retailer, but I value my independence, to be honest.
Last year, you won an award for the best new food business. What was that like?
That was an incredible experience. One of my customers nominated me, and I really didn't expect to win, because the other people in the competition were amazing. That was the high point, actually, getting to know some of them and seeing what they'd achieved. Of course, it was nice to get first prize, £5,000, and it was fun appearing on a radio programme to talk about my business. I've never done that before.
It sounds really good. I'd just like to ask you one more question, if that's okay. If someone said to you that they were thinking of setting up a business now, what would be your top tip for them?
Well, I'd have lots of suggestions, actually. It's important to have some financial security. But more than anything, I'd say to know exactly what you hope to achieve. You don't need to come up with something totally new, but whatever your idea is, you must believe in it and be prepared to work hard at it.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming in today. It's been really interesting talking to you.
My pleasure.
That is the end of question 7. In a moment, you will hear question 8. Now look at the questions for this part of the exam. Question 8, Part A. You will hear an architect giving a talk about a type of building known as super adobe. Listen to the talk and complete the notes in Part A. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the talk twice.
Thank you for coming along to today's talk. First of all, I want to tell you about an interesting development in architecture. It's not a new one by any means, but it involves an old technique that has been adapted for more modern purposes. I've been finding out about shelters called super adobe domes, which are also known as earth huts. These sound like the type of structure you might see on a mountain or in a desert even. The original intention was that these shelters would be used to construct settlements on the moon. This hasn't yet happened, as I'm sure you all know. However, many of these structures have been constructed elsewhere and for a variety of different purposes. I was particularly interested to find out about a recent project. This involved the construction of several, the size of classrooms, in the playgrounds of primary schools near Heathrow Airport, London. You probably know that this is one of the busiest airports in the world. And the reason for this project? It's quite simply a means to limit the noise that children are exposed to while outside. Lots of planes fly very low over the school, and this can be quite disturbing for the children and staff. Basically, to create a shelter, material in the form of a tube is packed full of soil. This is repeated many times to produce lots of bags. Then these are laid one on top of the other in layers to form walls. It's amazing that this can be done without the use of nails or bricks. Instead, the walls are held securely in place with wire, and an igloo or dome shape is achieved as the layers are laid in circles, which gradually decrease in diameter towards the top. There are several benefits to this method of construction. Costly materials are avoided as earth dug from the construction site is used. This also means that transport costs are kept to a minimum. Another plus is that because the structures are self-supporting, the foundations that need to be put in place underneath the structure don't take very long at all to dig, as they can be very shallow, usually less than a third of a metre deep. I'd like to tell you a bit more about other ways in which these structures have been used, but first, are there any questions?
Now you will hear the talk again.
Thank you for coming along to today's talk. First of all, I want to tell you about an interesting development in architecture. It's not a new one by any means, but it involves an old technique that has been adapted for more modern purposes. I've been finding out about shelters called super adobe domes, which are also known as earth huts. These sound like the type of structure you might see on a mountain or in a desert even. The original intention was that these shelters would be used to construct settlements on the moon. This hasn't yet happened, as I'm sure you all know. However, many of these structures have been constructed elsewhere and for a variety of different purposes. I was particularly interested to find out about a recent project. This involved the construction of several, the size of classrooms, in the playgrounds of primary schools near Heathrow Airport, London. You probably know that this is one of the busiest airports in the world. And the reason for this project? It's quite simply a means to limit the noise that children are exposed to while outside. Lots of planes fly very low over the school, and this can be quite disturbing for the children and staff. Basically, to create a shelter, material in the form of a tube is packed full of soil. This is repeated many times to produce lots of bags. Then these are laid one on top of the other in layers to form walls. It's amazing that this can be done without the use of nails or bricks. Instead, the walls are held securely in place with wire, and an igloo or dome shape is achieved as the layers are laid in circles, which gradually decrease in diameter towards the top. There are several benefits to this method of construction. Costly materials are avoided as earth dug from the construction site is used. This also means that transport costs are kept to a minimum. Another plus is that because the structures are self-supporting, the foundations that need to be put in place underneath the structure don't take very long at all to dig, as they can be very shallow, usually less than a third of a metre deep. I'd like to tell you a bit more about other ways in which these structures have been used, but first, are there any questions?
Question 8, Part B. Now listen to a conversation between two students about the earth huts and complete the sentences in Part B. Write one or two words only in each gap. You will hear the conversation twice.
Well, that was a really interesting talk yesterday.
Yes, I'd never heard about these earth huts before, but I went straight to the library afterwards to find out more about them.
I read up about them as well. People have used them a lot in Africa, apparently.
And in Nepal, too.
Is that where the man is from? You know, the one who came up with the idea for them?
Actually, he's from Iran. Well, that's what the tutor said.
Don't you think it's incredible that such a simple structure is so strong?
Yes, and so safe, too. Apparently, they won't burn down. And they mostly stay upright even if there's an earthquake or a flood.
That's why they've been used in emergency zones a lot. So much better than housing people in tents. Although, of course, tents can be put up much more quickly.
Another great thing is that they can be constructed on a hillside. They don't need to be built on flat ground.
It's a very clever method of building, I think. I like the name too, Super Adobe. I looked on the internet and found out about a company that uses this technique to build all sorts of different things. They've made chicken huts, you know, to protect the birds from foxes and other predators. Also ponds to keep fish in. And even pizza ovens, would you believe?
That's amazing.
I was also interested in the project near Heathrow. It's a brilliant way of minimising the noise that the children are exposed to from the aircraft.
Yes, I looked into that a bit more as well. Apparently at one school where they've built the earth huts, planes fly only 180 metres overhead and every 90 seconds. That must be so loud.
It is. I read that the sound level is up to 87 decibels. That's pretty noisy.
But since the earth huts have been built, children can use them so their exposure to the noise is reduced. The level of the noise is about 17 decibels lower when you're inside the hut.
I'd hate to live so close to an airport. But I read that there's a lot of pressure on the airport to try to control the noise problems. One strategy they're using is what they call a fly quiet table, which is basically a way of ranking airlines in terms of the amount of noise that they create. The ones at the top of the list, which get a red rating, are then approached to see if they can work with the airport to reduce noise pollution.
Well, let's hope that works.
Now you will hear the conversation again.
Well, that was a really interesting talk yesterday.
Yes, I'd never heard about these earth huts before, but I went straight to the library afterwards to find out more about them.
I read up about them as well. People have used them a lot in Africa, apparently.
And in Nepal, too.
Is that where the man is from? You know, the one who came up with the idea for them?
Actually, he's from Iran. Well, that's what the tutor said.
Don't you think it's incredible that such a simple structure is so strong?
Yes, and so safe, too. Apparently, they won't burn down, and they mostly stay upright even if there's an earthquake or a flood.
That's why they've been used in emergency zones a lot. So much better than housing people in tents. Although, of course, tents can be put up much more quickly.
Another great thing is that they can be constructed on a hillside. They don't need to be built on flat ground.
It's a very clever method of building, I think. I like the name, too. Super Adobe. I looked on the internet and found out about a company that uses this technique to build all sorts of different things. They've made chicken huts, you know, to protect the birds from foxes and other predators. Also ponds to keep fish in. And even pizza ovens, would you believe?
That's amazing.
I was also interested in the project near Heathrow. It's a brilliant way of minimising the noise that the children are exposed to from the aircraft.
Yes, I looked into that a bit more as well. Apparently at one school where they've built the earth huts, planes fly only 180 metres overhead and every 90 seconds. That must be so loud.
It is. I read that the sound level is up to 87 decibels. That's pretty noisy.
But since the earth huts have been built, children can use them so their exposure to the noise is reduced. The level of the noise is about 17 decibels lower when you're inside the hut.
I'd hate to live so close to an airport. But I read that there's a lot of pressure on the airport to try to control the noise problems. One strategy they're using is what they call a fly quiet table, which is basically a way of ranking airlines in terms of the amount of noise that they create. The ones at the top of the list, which get a red rating, are then approached to see if they can work with the airport to reduce noise pollution.
Well, let's hope that works.
That is the end of question 8 and of the test. In a moment, your teacher will collect your papers. Please check that you have written your name, centre number and candidate number on the front of your question paper. Remember, you must not talk until all the papers have been collected. Teacher, please collect all the papers.